You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
My friends, good evening one and all. I'm Winston Smith. I'm not James Edwards. As I said, I am Winston Smith, a longtime co-host of the Political Cesspool. I'm here with Stephanie, the transcribing goddess, who's going to listen to our guest tonight and fill me in on what he's saying. So I'll be here for this the final hour of tonight's broadcast. Really a pleasure to be with you again. I look forward to this. I'm also pleased to welcome Mr. Rick Tyler to the broadcast. Rick is running for Congress to represent Tennessee's 3rd Congressional District, which covers a very large region of the eastern part of the state. He's originally from Miami, Florida. And growing up there gave him a front row seat to the effects of non-white immigration. Rick is well-versed in global politics and how it spreads like a cancer to affect every aspect of the lives of ordinary people like us. You can learn more about Rick Tyler from his website, www.ricktylerforcongress.com. That's all one word. RickTylerForCongress.com. And with that, Rick Tyler, welcome to the Political Cesspool.
Thank you so much, Winston. It's indeed a great pleasure to be on the air with you tonight.
Well, we've received numerous emails from our listeners asking when we were going to have you on, and we'll get into the reason for those emails very shortly. But you are running for Congress, correct?
That is correct. I'm running for the United States House of Representatives here in the 3rd Congressional District in the state of Tennessee.
Well, let's start with the fundamental question that every candidate for office should answer. Why are you running?
Well, of course, lest anybody misunderstand my intentions, this is not some gadfly exercise for my own self-aggrandizement. I believe with the utmost of sincerity that I can actually win this seat. Now, I say that with the proviso that, I'm well acquainted with the phenomenon of vote fraud and all of the skillful machinations with which the power structure can rig and control the outcome of elections. But having said all that, I do believe that potentially, by the grace of God, I can actually win this congressional race, and I'm running with that intent in mind, obviously, to deliver a mega dose of urgently needed truth to an America which is right now teetering perilously close to absolute destruction.
All right. I'd like to start by letting folks know why or how you achieved a bit of notoriety in the past few weeks. You erected a billboard with the blazing message, "Make America White Again." How did you come up with that?
Well, I, of course, derived some inspiration from Donald Trump and his very profound yet simplistic message of "Make America Great Again." And, of course, I reasoned that if Trump is so controversial by, just saying the things that he says, quite obviously in the politically correct climate that we live in today, if one such as myself dared to put forth an audacious message, which of course is thoroughly rooted in truth and logic, but if one put forth the message of "Make America White Again," that this would in all likelihood captivate the attention of both friends and foes alike, and it would go viral, as the saying goes, and would very quickly generate something that is fundamental to the objective of winning any political race, and that's name recognition. Virtually overnight, the "Make America White Again" billboard translated things from me being a virtual political unknown to having almost universal name recognition in the district.
What was the reaction? You just explained that ultimate reaction was that it got you instant name recognition, and you are correct there, sir. It did get you instant name recognition. internationally, as a matter of fact. What was the reaction from individuals?
Well, it's been a mixed bag. Needless to say, there are those progressive, liberal, statist, socialist, Marxist types who absolutely loathe and despise hardcore truth. And, of course, they had the predictable reaction. They played right into my hands, however, because their vitriol and their absolute, you know, chaotic reaction was the very thing that propelled the story to international proportions as quickly as it did. However, there have been a great, great many people who have expressed thankfulness to me. Very frequently now, when I go into the local community, out to the grocery store or up to the local gas station, people, total strangers, people I don't even know, come up. They shake my hand. They thank me for taking the stand, for saying the things that so many people believe but are afraid to say. Frequently, they ask to have their picture taken with me. I do get a few negative public reactions from people, too, but usually that's in the form of muttering under the breath. There are, again, those who are against me, you know, very, very much so. But there's no question that the sleeping giant, the predominantly white population of my congressional district, definitely resonates with the very clear and concise message of Make America White Again.
You said that the reactions were the negative reactions were against you. Do you think that underneath that reaction against you is really a reaction against white people?
Well, I certainly believe that that is part of it. You know, this phenomenon called white guilt that we call white guilt, it's very real. White people have been subjected to such a long, protracted campaign of mind control and propaganda and brainwashing that without even realizing it, they suffer from this syndrome of white guilt. And they, a lot of them tend to have a knee-jerk reaction. You know, even good conservative, constitutionally oriented type, you know, people, you know, tend to exhibit this white guilt phenomenon as well. You know, very often they'll start their sentence by saying, "Now, I'm not a racist, but," you know, anybody who feels they have to start the sentence that way is exhibiting you know, the fact that they suffer from at least a twinge of white guilt. And so, yes, it's anti-white. Obviously, the white race is despised, unfortunately, by a significant number of non-white people. And it's simply a matter of jealousy and resentment. After all, the aggregate achievements of the white race literally run circles around all of the other races. And I'm speaking in terms of nation building and the construction and architecture of civilization and technology and all of the things that the world counts as, you know, very, very advanced and worthwhile. And so there is this jealousy factor that goes on. And of course, it's not right. It's not proper. And the white race needs to have the healthy, proper type of pride in the achievements of its racial family and needs to not quake with fear at the tactics of intimidation.
Is the billboard still an issue? Is it still up?
No,
hold on, Sam. Stephanie says we're going to a break, so hang on.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
If you're at all like me, you have a tough time remembering appointments and events. But ladies and gentlemen, I have the answer. It's a premier service on the internet called Memo to Me. It's free. You ought to try it. Now I never miss the honey-do items from my wife or the important business meetings. They have strict privacy protection. That means they will release your email address to no one ever. You will not get spam because of Memo to Me. Unmatched dependability. Ladies and gentlemen, these folks have been around since 1998, and they are absolutely up online all the time to send you your reminders and appointments. They have rock-solid reliability. They have 5 redundant internet connections, diesel-powered generators backing up the system. I'm telling you, Memo to Me is the premier reminder service on the internet. It's free. You got to give it a try. And, oh, by the way, if you're not available at your computer to get your email reminders, they can even send a reminder to your cell phone or pager. I use MemoToMe.com daily and highly recommend it to you. MemoToMe.com. Memo to Me.
This is Joyce Riley from the Power Hour, and I want to introduce you to Numana Storable Foods. This is the first brand of storable foods that I am willing to put my name behind. It's food you can trust. No GMOs, no MSG, no chemical preservatives, and no fake meat. Plus, Numana doesn't just make that claim. They back it up with independent evaluation and testing. Another thing that Numana really does that excites me is the delicious vegetarian options. If your standards are as high as mine, I can confidently tell you that Numana Storable Foods are the quality choice that you've been waiting for. Numana won't just meet your expectations, they will exceed them. And that's why we're thrilled to have the good guys from Numana joining the Power Hour family. Go to powerprepper.com and learn about Numana Storable Foods. You can also call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Numana, the storable food you'll love to eat.
Get on the show and speak with James and the gang. Call us toll free at 1-866-986-6397. And now back to tonight's show.
Welcome back, folks. Welcome back to this evening's broadcast of the Political Cesspool radio program. I'm Winston Smith, sitting in for James Edwards, who's doing who knows what. I have a guest tonight, Mr. Rick Tyler, who's running for 3rd Congressional District in Tennessee. And when we left off, I had asked him, we were talking about the effects of his famous Make America White Again billboard. And I had asked him if the billboard was still an issue, if people still talk about it. So, Rick, take it away.
Well, amazingly, Winston, the billboard was actually illegally taken down and the sign, the vinyl, was stolen. Within about 6 or 7 hours after it was put up. And what happened was, right after the billboard was put up, 10 minutes after it's being erected, I received a call from the owner of the billboard, whom I have a contract with, a civil contract that runs through the election in November. The owner had seen the billboard. He was jovial. He said to me, he said, Rick, he said, you're going to need to get more food at that restaurant tonight. I own a restaurant called the Whitewater Grill in Ocoee, Tennessee. I said, what do you mean, Ken? He said, I've already had, in 10 minutes, I've had 5 phone calls, and 4 of the people said they're voting for you. He said, you're going to have a big crowd at your restaurant tonight. I said, oh, great. Well, sure enough, a couple of hours later, I was at the restaurant, and I was visiting with customers, and all of a sudden, I got another phone call, and this time, it was the owner's wife. And she was very shrill and very angry, and she ordered me, to take the billboard down and threatened that if I didn't, that she would burn it down within an hour. And so, of course, I told her that that was ridiculous, I did not take it down, and then I didn't even know how to take a billboard down, you know, for that matter. Well, as the evening wore on, of course, the controversy began, continued to grow and swirl around, and about midnight that night, I drove down to the billboard location and viewed it, eyeballed it, and confirmed that it was still up and, you know, still safe and sound. So I returned back to my home in my office, and I was working on some preparation for a commercial spot for the radio the following day. And at about 1 o'clock, I got contacted by an associate of mine who was monitoring the situation on social media. And he asked me if the billboard was up, and I said, as far as I knew, it was. And he said, well, there are indicators online that it's been taken down.
So I immediately got in my truck and began driving down there, and I called the local sheriff's department and told them that I was reporting to them likely vandalism of my billboard. And at that point, the dispatcher told me, no, he said, Mrs. Bishop has called us and told us that she was going down there with somebody to remove the sign. Well, by the time I got there, it was gone, and the vinyl itself had been stolen. And, of course, that was the end of that sign. Now, I had a second sign, billboard, that was up in a location nearby, and it had a picture of the White House with Confederate flags flying from it, and it said, I have a dream across the top. And then Rick Tyler for Congress.com was at the bottom. The following day, the mob began to threaten the owner of that billboard with the burning down of his very successful business if he did not acquiesce to their terroristic threats and take that billboard sign down. And that gentleman, of course, he was frightened beyond description, and he succumbed to the demands of this terroristic threat, and he took that sign down. And so, you know, that has happened, and even though the signs were taken down, of course, the pictures of the signs had already been sent worldwide online. Now, what I am getting ready to do at the end of July, I have a bus, a tour bus, that is going to have the two verboten billboards, one on each side, 8 feet tall by 16 feet wide. And this tour bus, which also has a platform erected on its roof that I will be able to get up on and use it as a big soapbox, this tour bus is going to be used to tour the entire 3rd District, taking the billboard signs, which, of course, had been suppressed via the violation of my First Amendment rights, to take these signs to the electorate and to the various counties of the district, and we are going to not allow this draconian attack upon the First Amendment to go unchallenged. We are going to take this message to the people so they will have the opportunity to overcome their fear and vote for me in this upcoming congressional election.
You rightly used the phrase, rightly in my opinion anyhow, terroristic threats made against the business owner. Is that being investigated at all?
Well, I think you probably know the answer to that question, you know, because we are white, I'm white, and therefore don't have any civil rights. You know, that if it was a black candidate who had had his sign taken down because of terroristic threats, we'd probably have 500 federal agents, you know, taking up at least temporary residence in the county. But because it's me, an outspoken and ardent proponent of the civil rights of white people, all they do is basically just yawn and show no interest whatsoever.
You're taking a very bold step running for Congress on an explicitly pro-white people campaign. And I see nothing wrong with that, of course. Non-whites run for office all the time advocating for their racial group, and white people should be able to do likewise. How have you been received both locally and nationally?
Well, again, you know, the local reaction has been a mixed bag. Of course, I've been told by many, many, many people, like I say, total strangers, how much they appreciate what I'm doing. They have reaffirmed time and again that, you know, the sleeping giants, you know, quote-unquote silent majority, especially in Polk County. The county I'm in is 98.6% white. And you don't live in a 98.6% white county unless you harbor some sentiments, you know, of affinity for that type of a demographic makeup. Now, nationally, obviously, there has been a great deal of vitriol and a great deal of, you know, attack-type journalism, predictably from, you know, the bastions of liberalism. But even from a national standpoint, I have been reached out to, and I have reached out to a great many of people, you know, who are of like mind and like commitment throughout the nation. And the good thing about, you know, what has happened under the auspices of this campaign is that it is affording an opportunity for a great many people who are on the same wavelength concerning this very urgent and vital subject to connect one with another and to begin to lay the groundwork to form a unified front, you know, in our common cause against these evil forces that are trying to destroy us.
Uh-huh. Can you give some examples of negative national attention that you received? Well, let me ask you this first. Have you received any death threats?
Yeah, there have been some death threats. And, of course, people who openly give death threats or, you know, rule of thumb is they're not the ones you have to worry about. You know, the ones that you have to be more concerned about, you know, are the ones that, don't telegraph, you know, what it is that they are supposedly going to do. Of course, the ultimate death threat would come from the powers that be, you know, the forces that operate clandestinely and surreptitiously in our land today. You know, when you've been a lifetime conspiracy science student like myself, you know, you understand that these people, they can kill anybody they want to. They can kill presidents, and they can sweep it under the rug and concoct bogus scenarios as to how the crime supposedly unfolded. And I tell people that, you know, obviously the only hope is divine protection. One of the first speeches that I gave early on after my declaration of my candidacy was to a local group. This was a couple months ago. And after, you know, kind of a rousing, you know, speech that, you know, got people standing up and clapping, an elderly gentleman came up to me afterwards, and he vigorously shook my hand, and he said, "They're going to kill you." And I said, "Sir, if everybody in the world wants you dead and God wants you alive, you'll be alive." And if I didn't have that kind of faith, that kind of Christian faith and biblical foundation and faith, I certainly would not be doing what I'm doing, because I understand that there are people who would readily and would, you know, willfully, you know, kill somebody such as myself, you know, who is making this kind of a stand and getting the truth out in such an expansive manner.
All right. We're coming up on a break, so stay with us, folks. We'll be back with more from Rick Tyler.
Exposing corruption, informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
With news this hour from LibertyNewsDaily.com, I'm William Grigg.
Republican presidential nominee-in-waiting Donald Trump met with 200 congressional Republicans on July 7th in the hope of building rapport and reassuring them of his electoral viability. Many who had previously expressed support for the candidate said that the meeting went well. Some who hadn't yet been won over remained skeptical. Illinois Congressman Adam Kinziger told The Hill that the meeting, which began 20 minutes late, was awkward, really awkward. There is a lack of enthusiasm. You can feel it. At one point in the discussion, Kinziger continued, Mr. Trump cited press coverage of his recent remarks praising Saddam Hussein's use of summary execution as a counterterrorism strategy as an example of how unfairly the media has treated his presidential campaign. All I can say is that I haven't endorsed him, added Representative Charlie Dent of Pennsylvania. I believe he has a lot of persuading to do. The St. Augustine nursing home in Diest, Belgium, has been ordered to pay the equivalent of nearly $7,000 in fines and civil damages to the adult children of a 74-year-old woman who had sought to be euthanized. The woman, who suffered from lung cancer, was taken to her home where she later died peacefully. The children filed a complaint claiming that by delaying the woman's death by euthanasia, the Catholic facility had caused her unnecessary mental and physical suffering. The facility had a long-standing policy that it would not participate in euthanasia under any circumstance. The three-judge panel ruled that the nursing home had no right to refuse euthanasia on the basis of conscientious objection. The Catholic Herald warns that the ruling could spell the closures of scores of Catholic-run nursing and care homes across Belgium. For commentary and insights on a troubled world, visit Joel Skousen's worldaffairsbrief.com. For LibertyNewsDaily.com, I'm William Grigg.
The Occidental Quarterly fills a unique niche in bringing together scholarly articles on a wide range of topics that are mired in political correctness elsewhere. It is edited by Professor Kevin McDonald, who's no stranger to listeners of the political cesspool. There are quite a few reasons for the precarious state of our civilization and our people, but one of the main ones is that we have lost the intellectual and moral high ground to a cultural elite that is hostile to our people and our culture. Those of us who are politically aware must understand that the elites dominating culture and the political process in the West are intellectually and morally bankrupt. TOQ is the key. Digital download subscriptions are only $30 a year. Subscriptions by first class mail are only $60 a year. Go to toqonline.com and click on subscribe now. In addition to receiving fascinating and informative articles, you will also be supporting the work of scholars who are part of a community defending our people and our culture with the highest level of integrity and intellectual sophistication. That's toqonline.com. Subscribe now.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, welcome back, my friends. Welcome back to tonight's broadcast of the Political Cesspool. I'm Winston Smith, filling in for James Edwards in this final hour of the broadcast. And I have as a guest Mr. Rick Tyler, congressional candidate for the 3rd Congressional District of Tennessee. And you can find out more about Mr. Tyler and his candidacy by going to www.ricktylerforcongress.com. Again, that's www.ricktylerforcongress.com. That's all one word, Rick Tyler for Congress. When we left off, I had asked about your reception, Rick, nationally, and I've asked you about death threats, and you have a very inspiring and courageous testimony, if you will, of your trust in divine providence over protecting your life. I was wondering if you could give some examples of some of the negative national attention you've received from journalists or political hacks or whatever.
I think, you know, we counted just trying to tabulate the extent of, you know, news articles being written in publications throughout the nation and the world, and, you know, it was well over 150, and, you know, a lot of the big muckety-muck publications of the, you know, control media. And, of course, you know, predictably and typically, they, you know, were going from their basic, you know, talking points, not doing their own independent research. New York Daily News was probably one of the most ridiculous, you know, stories, you know, where the, you know, the writer of the article, you know, opined and editorialized, you know, under the guise of being a reporter and a journalist. You know, they use all of the buzzwords, all of the ad hominem attacks, racist, white supremacist. You know, they'll weave in references here and there to David Duke and, you know, use all of their typical methodologies that they use. And, of course, one thing that I always do when I have the opportunity to deal directly with the media is I won't tango with them. You know, it takes two to tango, and I simply will not countenance this use of the canard of racism. I will demand on the spot that they define racism, and, of course, they never can do that. And then I point out to them, that, you know, their inability to define racism really renders it as being an invalid technique on their part. And, of course, I, you know, expose them and call them out. One very, very good media interchange that I had was with a local TV reporter out of Chattanooga, Tennessee, a young lady by the name of Kelly McCarthy. And she did a very, very even-handed job and interviewed me on the roadside beside the billboard where it was taken down. And I had a 9-minute interview with her where she asked them, you know, good and hard questions, but then gave me an opportunity to respond to them in a proper way. And this 9-minute interview on the roadside, you know, has been viewed over 1 million times, and the feedback that I get from it is overwhelmingly favorable. And, of course, even people who are not necessarily in agreement with me, they, you know, tend to express the sentiment that, you know, I have the absolute First Amendment right to express my opinions and that I do it in a very level-headed and passionate yet, you know, controlled and, you know, dignified way. So I appreciate when there are people who are even of a different persuasion, but they will make that kind of acknowledgement. But there's everything from A to Z, you know, from one end of the spectrum to the other, you know, as you can imagine. And, again, sometimes there were some inaccurate quotations that were attributed to me, and numerous scores of publications, in fact, picked up on those inaccurate quotations and printed them, you know, verbatim. And so a lot of the news articles with those inaccurate quotations render an impression that is, you know, less than, you know, the accurate statements that I did, in fact, make on the first evening of the controversy.
Referring back to the interview, where can folks see that?
Well, if they will Google Make America White Again and Rick Tyler, that interview will come up. It's on Facebook. It's on YouTube. And even if they go to Channel 3 in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and go to their Facebook page, you know, they will be able to find it there. It's not difficult to find, like I say. You know, it's been viewed over a million times. I held a press conference the following Monday after the Billboard controversy erupted the previous Tuesday, and that press conference was attended by the full media representation out of Chattanooga, and that same channel, Channel 3, streamed the interview live on Facebook, and there were 13,000 people watching the press conference live for almost a full hour.
Mm-hmm. All right. Since your campaign is explicitly pro-white people, I assume you're mightily concerned about immigration issues. We all know the grim prediction that by 2040, year 2040, the white population in the U.S. will be the minority population. Why do you think that's happening? And if elected, how will you try to stop the non-white invasion?
Yes, I believe that unfortunate statistic is going to be reached before 2040. Again, I grew up in Miami, and I saw how overnight Miami, Florida was taken over by an alien influx, you know, that came very, very rapidly, very quickly. And, it was repeated in 79 in the Mariel boat lift. But, yes, I'm absolutely, concerned to the greatest possible degree about this immigration debacle. And, of course, we know that it came about as a result of the legislation that was, you know, put through fraud in the mid-60s. They didn't canvass the supermajority white population in 65 and ask them if it was okay with them if they were going to, change the demographic to what it is today, you know, barely 60% over the next half century. Instead, they lied. They said that it would not fundamentally change the demographic. They got the legislation in, and then they proceeded to bring in 85% non-white legal immigration from that point forward. And then all of the illegal immigration, which is almost exclusively non-white, so that over 50 years, 70 million non-whites came into our country and reduced us a good whopping 25 percentage points down to the 60%, that we're at right now and going down quickly. We obviously need to bring about an immediate cessation of all non-white immigration into this country. As a matter of policy, I would advocate staunchly for that. As a representative, and by the way, if I do get elected, I will have a bully pulpit that no congressman has ever had before in the history of this nation. Every eye internationally will be upon this race, and if I get elected, I will be able to do and accomplish things in the Congress that really nobody else has ever been able to do, and I will boldly do that very thing. Now, I would also advocate for the policies that would maximize the white immigration into this country from nations such as South Africa, where the white minority is being, victimized by genocidal policies, former Rhodesia as well. I would also advocate for maximum white immigration out of Europe, where the white people there are being overrun by the teeming multitudes of the third world. I would also advocate strongly for the termination of all domestic policies which facilitate and bring about the escalation of the non-white birth rate in this country. You know, people who are on welfare, people who can't support themselves or a child that they bring into this world, should not be able to continue to receive any type of government assistance and continue to bring more children into the world. Of course, the welfare state as a whole is egregiously unconstitutional, and it should be shut down systematically as a matter of policy as well. And, of course, the final policy that I would vigorously advocate for would be the shutting down of all illegal immigration, obviously a great deal of which comes across our deliberately porous southern border.
I often read opinion pieces, and I engage people in conversation also, and the authors of these pieces and the people who I engage, they'll say something like, why are white people afraid of and angry at their approaching minority status? Now, that question makes the wrong assumption that we're afraid and angry. We're concerned, of course, and legitimately so. But my reply to such people is, well, why are you so encouraged and happy about it?
Very good point, and I would take it one step further and say that many of us are righteously indignant that our inheritance has been stolen from us. After all, it was our racial ancestors who promulgated the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, the United States Constitution, the Magna Carta, going all the way back to Runnymede. It was our racial ancestors who birthed and brought forth this singularly unique great nation, a Christian constitutional republic, and it has been stolen from us. It has been taken from us by fraud, by theft, and even by strong-arm tactics. And we should be righteously indignant, and we should be passionate in our determination to right this wrong and to reestablish justice. That's what Anglo-Saxon jurisprudence is all about, the exaltation of righteous judgment. And to sit there and countenance and allow a crime as egregious and as vile as the theft of our inheritance from our racial ancestors is the epitome of dereliction of duty on the part of the modern white electorate.
Stephanie says we're coming up on a break, so can you hang on for another segment?
Absolutely.
Very good. Folks, stay with us. We'll be right back with more from Rick Tyler.
We fought, we learned, we struggled,
we won.
Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
Are you familiar with the term vigor? Strength in body and mind? He pursued his tennis game with vigor, for example? Well, I hadn't, but I learned about it from Kirk Crosby. All right, and he actually let me take a scientifically proven free vigor test. And I got 13 out of 32, not very good. But I worked on it with him, and believe it or not, now I have a 29 out of 32 and improving vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is this scientific vigor score, huh? My response is you got to take the free test, available now. Get a hold of Kirk Crosby to learn about it. The number is 801-669-2211. That's 801-669-2211. Or email Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com. That's Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com for your free vigor test today. Kurt, libertyroundtable.com, or 801-669-2211. Vigor test free, scientifically proven today.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right. Welcome back, folks. It's been an interesting evening with Rick Tyler. I'm Winston Smith. filling in for James Edwards on this final segment of the final hour of this broadcast of the Political Cesspool. Rick, I'd like to have you on for a little bit more here, and if you don't mind, I thank you for your time. But I'd like to ask you. I'd like to ask you about this. 2 weeks ago, the people of Britain finally woke up and voted to leave the European Union, and it was a move that was widely seen as a refutation of globalism. Brits who voted to leave and who were interviewed after the vote overwhelmingly said that the crux of the issue for them was immigration. Do you see a connection between globalism and immigration? And if elected, how will you fight it?
Most definitely. And I was so excited that the vote turned out the way it did. Of course, I looked for, you know, a very quick retaliation against the courageous people who voted to pull out of the EU there in Britain. I equate it with secession. I believe that they, in effect, they seceded from the European Union. And I believe that, you know, obviously the immigration policies that are flooding and inundating Western nations with the teeming multitudes of the third world, they are one of the centerpiece policies of the globalists to try to enslave humanity and to try to destroy that great bulwark against tyranny, which is the white supermajority of a nation such as ours that we have in the past as recently as 50 years ago. I believe that secession really is the only immediate answer for the rebuilding of the fortifications and the foundations of what our founding fathers established in excess of 200 years ago. I believe that we are going to have to get real serious about doing what Britain has done by, you know, pulling out of the EU. We're going to have to do that in our own country, regrettably, because we have let this situation get so far out of control. And I believe that secession is a potential answer for here in our own country domestically, as a means to begin to lay the groundwork for ultimate restoration. But it's going to be a long, difficult, arduous struggle any way we slice it.
It wasn't that long ago. It was early in Obama's first administration, I think it was, that he went to some – there was some African country that had seceded from its parent country. And I wish I could remember what it is, but I'm certain it happened. And he went there to speak. He welcomed the formation of this new country. He welcomed this secession, and he even invoked the words of Martin Luther King in congratulating these people from seceding. And there have been numerous times in American history where we have supported secession in other countries. It just seems like our government will not support secession of people who really want nothing more to do with it.
Well, that's true. And, of course, you know, the unfinished business of the 1860s, I call it, is a real sore spot with me. And, you know, I like, you know, the fact that I believe it was Salmon Chase who said, we can't put Jeff Davis on trial. Of course, Davis was the foremost constitutional scholar in the country at that time. He said, because if we put him on trial, he'll walk right out of the courtroom and back into the White House of the Confederacy. There's no question in any rational person's mind that the invasion of the South was nothing short of naked, brutal aggression. You know, they constituted war crimes against the South, and we were militarily subjugated. And there's no statute of limitations on murder. The accessories after the fact that continue to perpetuate the crimes of the 1860s are going to have to be dealt with ultimately. And this, people say, oh, this happened 150 years ago, get over it. No, we're not going to get over it. This was brutal, genocidal murder. And again, as I stated, there's no statute of limitations on murder, and we have to redress this grievous injustice. And I think the Brexit vote just, you know, brings the issue right back up to the forefront to where we can begin to explain it to people and help them to understand that these crimes of the past are very relevant to the injustices that we are suffering right at this present moment.
Well, the rampant, malignant black-on-white crime is a direct result of Reconstruction. I've always said that the secession is reverse conquest. What do you think of that?
I think that's an excellent term, and if you don't mind, I'm going to steal that from you.
No, there's no theft involved. You're welcome to use it. Well, look, how's your campaign going?
Well, it's going well in terms of the the name recognition factor, which again is a prerequisite to having a any chance whatsoever. Now, the bus tour that we are planning to launch at the end of the month, it will come immediately on the heels of an event that we're going to hold right here at our home base in Ocoee, and we're excited that there are some nationalistic groups that are going to throw their lot in with us and help to promote this event. And of course, anybody who wants to come and be a part of it on July 30th is welcome to do so. It will be in close proximity to where my restaurant is located. It'll be on a private piece of land. You know, we will have security in place, and we'll be holding a press conference to announce the tour. And it'll, of course, feature the bus with the big brazen, bold billboards mounted on the sides. And, we will feature, like I said, a press conference and an announcement, relative to many of the things that the campaign is getting ready to do. One thing we're also holding is a fundraising dinner where we will give a door prize of an AR-15 at that dinner. And that's, of course, to rub in the faces of the liberals the fact that we are unapologetic, vigorous proponents of the Second Amendment. And we intend to defend ourselves, if necessary, by, lethal force, if, foolish forces try to, in some way threaten or intimidate us with thuggish tactics.
As I read the your website, the about you section, I see, and it's, a blind man could see it practically, that your Christian faith permeates your campaign and pretty much permeates all of your studies and that you've done, your considerable amount of studies. And I'd like to, since you are well-versed in such things, I'd like to give you a theory of mine. Now, I think that the reason we have lost our country is because we have violated the Fifth Commandment, which says to honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. Now, every day, we see how people in the South, how white people in the South, are abandoning their heritage, and they are dishonoring our forebears, our mothers and fathers. Now, I'll confess to you, I'm a Presbyterian, a Calvinist, and we have a view of the Fifth Commandment that it doesn't mean just your immediate mother and father, but it goes all the way back throughout your lineage. Now, people in the South have pretty much disowned their heritage, and our land is being taken from us as punishment. And as soon as we get back to the business of honoring where we came from, honoring our fathers and our mothers, then our land will be restored to us. What do you think?
I agree with you 1,000%. I have the exact same, belief and premise relative to the commandment that you have spoken of, which is the commandment, with promise. And I believe that when we turn our backs on those foundational truths that all of our ancestors, going back centuries, concurred upon and believed wholeheartedly that we are slapping them in the face. We are committing this grievous insult against them. And 2 Chronicles 7:14 says, if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven, will forgive their sin, and will heal their land. Well, one of the wicked ways, and of course the scripture also says judgment begins at the house of God, one of the wicked ways of the modern church is this rejection of the ancient landmarks. You know, the psalmist said, if the foundations be destroyed, what shall the righteous do? I believe the response correctly to that rhetorical question is rebuild the foundations. And that means to return to those ancient landmarks, and especially as concerns race, heritage, culture. You know, the sin of miscegenation is running rampant today. And it wasn't that long ago that miscegenation was readily recognized as an abomination in the eyes of God, and now we have apologists for miscegenation that are in the pulpits of the modern church. This is a horrific sin that needs to be repented of, and if we don't repent of this sin as a people, we will continue to suffer the curses that are spoken of in Deuteronomy 28. And I look forward to being able to proclaim the gospel of Jesus Christ. I've been a born-again, spiritually regenerate believer in Jesus Christ, and I too am Calvinistic. But I also understand the importance of how free will plays into the construct. You know, you have to have both election and free will to understand and rightly divide the word of truth. But I look forward to being able to proclaim the gospel of Jesus Christ from the floor of the United States House of Representatives and to call the nation to a 2 Chronicles 7:14 style repentance through the power and the blood of Jesus Christ. And I promise that I will do that as a congressman in the United States House of Representatives.
Well, I'm afraid that's the end of the show. Rick, I'd like to thank you for being on with me, and I wish you all the best in your campaign.
Well, I thank you so much for letting me be on, and God bless everybody.
PoliticalCesspool.org.